Good morning, everyone. The Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs, Space and Domestic Security will now come to order. Lois, will you please call the roll?
Chair Wright.
Here.
Vice Chair Torres.
Here.
Senator Baxley. Senator Collins.
Here.
Senator Pizzo. Quorum present.
Thank you very much, Lois. Let's all please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, led by, how about that, Jake Collins.
Senator Collins.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Reminder to please silence any and all electronic devices that you may have with you today. Anyone wishing to speak before the committee should complete an appearance form and hand it to a member of the sergeant's office. Should you select to waive your speaking time, your position will be included in the committee meeting records. Committee members, we're going to go to tab two today and start out with a presentation by Colonel Robert Long, President and CEO of Space Florida. Colonel Long, you are recognized, sir, and good morning.
All right, so let me start with a little bit of background on myself, just as coming into new to the role. I've had a chance to talk to many of you, but just for the benefit of everyone, I just retired from the United States Space Force this summer after spending 26 years in both the Air Force and the Space Force, always in the space career field, doing various different things across that community, including operations, policy. I was in the Pentagon a couple different times. And so I had the opportunity to really see the growth of the space industry from that perspective over nearly just over 26 years. And what I would say is the value proposition of what space brings to the table, I think, is clearly clear to everybody. But at the same time, I think we have a lot to do to continue to grow that industry overall. And one of the things I really took away from my last position, which was the commander out at Vandenberg Space Force Base, the sister unit to Patrick, was the relationships with our local communities were incredibly important to success. We could not do anything without the support of both the local communities and at the state level. And when I would always talk to my colleagues on the East Coast, I was always admittedly envious of the relationship that they had with Space Florida. So when the opportunity arose to come out here and put my name in the hat for this position, the timing was wonderful for that personally. And I was extremely fortunate to get selected to be a part of this organization and to come out and work here in a state that's very supportive to the space economy and space industry. So let's talk a little bit about what we're doing here. And as many of you know, but I will reemphaze, the Space Florida is the state's aerospace finance and development authority. In 2006, the foresight of the state to set up this organization as it is was incredibly fortunate, I think. And it's really proven, I think, value in terms of the businesses and the economic impact that it's attracted here to the state, especially when you consider the package that not only the state but Space Florida brings to the table in order to encourage growth. You know, I have been I've told this to many people. I thought I understood what Space Florida was, and I knew it was a very positive thing from afar. But once you get into the organization and actually understand the toolkit and understand the people and, of course, the location, that is exactly what it's immensely more valuable and more powerful than what I had even thought. So it's a great place to be. You know, we like to say we have unrivaled experience, unmatched financial tools, and unbeatable location. And really, when it comes down to it, you know, when you think about it, we are truly building, you know, an interplanetary hub for space commerce, and it's an exciting to be part of that here in Space Florida. Just to give you a sense of what that looks like from an economic impact, you know, since 2007, it's about $5.9, almost $6 billion of total impact here in the state from the aerospace economy. And we're projected to continue that pace into the future, about just over $1 billion a year for at least the next 5 years we're seeing in the pipeline, and I'll show you what that pipeline looks like here in a few slides. But I think that speaks to the overall interest from a commerce and economic perspective here in the state of Florida in the aerospace industry. And the good news, I would also argue, is that in just the 3 months that I've been in a job, I've seen that pace start to even increase just recently. And so that's a very positive thing. We also have up there, you can see 20% of the workforce here in the state is aerospace workforce. And so that's something that is Phase 4 has been responsible for bringing into the state, and it will continue to be a focus area. And when you think about what we do, there's really two lines of business. One we call our Spaceport Authority. That's developing overall space transportation infrastructure, and this is where I like to remind people, and I'm a pretty simple person when it comes down to it, but you know, space launch and space transportation is certainly a hard endeavor. But when it comes down to it, ultimately, in the long run, it's just another mode of transportation. And the state was very prescient in 20 years ago when it designated space as a mode of transportation and put that relationship directly within us and then, of course, FDOT. And in doing so has unlocked tools and benefits that no other state can match in that regard. And that's allowed us to do that kind of planning and infrastructure development that has led to things like Launch Complex 46 and 20, which actually are two launch complexes that we own and manage on Cape Canaveral. It also has led to things like the redevelopment of the launch and landing facility, the old shuttle landing facility at NASA. And I think that is really indicative of what we see the future, being able to take over that, what is basically an outmoded parcel or capability, and then develop that into a place where opportunity can then grow. And Amazon's Project Kuiper, which is going to be an anchor tenant for that facility, is a great example of where we do it. On top of the investment in infrastructure, which is really going to be the enabler, power, roads, all of the things that companies need to grow and build, we're already investing in that now so that companies can get a leg up and move quickly in terms of their business strategies. And then on the other side, of course, the business development side. This is where we really have the ability to reach out to a diverse industry and bring in different kinds of financing and tax efficiencies that allow these businesses to really grow in smart and long-term ways. And overall, what our goal is when we do this is to really lower the cost of capital, and that in a long-term fashion. We like to say oftentimes, right, it's not just quick cash and a ribbon cutting, right? This is a relationship that we are building with these companies over the long haul. And we're starting to see where that has, now that we have a little bit of time under our belts, we are starting to see where that relationships are coming back. So companies are coming back and saying, hey, we build a building with you. Now we want to work on financing equipment, for example, and start to build that relationship. They see the value proposition there. And that flywheel is just starting to spin faster and faster and faster. And truly, as I mentioned earlier, there is nowhere else that offers that kind of financial toolkit for the aerospace industry at large. This is just to give everyone a little bit more of a background what that looks like when we talk about our financial toolkit. You'll see here these options stack, and being able to stack those options is really what brings together these financial efficiencies. And, you know, it starts on the lowering of the rent side. We call special dirt. This is either spaceport territory or other land that we have access to that allows us to take advantage of our authorities to offer lower costs, basically, when it comes down to it. And if we're doing the building or working with companies to do the building, you know, there's no developer fees, no margins, and we can do that as part of our core capabilities. So and then on top of that, depending on there's various other upfront programs that we can leverage depending on the type of company. Triumph Gulf Coast is a good one if it's in the Panhandle, for example. That is an option for them. Spaceport Improvement Program is really, I would say, a crown jewel when it comes to capabilities and opportunities. And that allows, in working with FDOT, if you're a spaceport territory with the right plan in place and the working, then it unlocks certain grant opportunities. And so we can continue to add that. And then, of course, the sales tax exemption is just one example of another opportunity that, you know, for equipment or something like that, that we can offer depending on the type of conduit financing that we arrange or synthetic leases. And then on the ongoing and the kind of long-term side, and this is really when we start to really focus on those long-term relationships, you know, things like, you know, ad valorem exemptions for property taxes. You know, those can build value over time in the long run that really truly doesn't get offered a few other places. And they off balance sheet financing, you know, if you're a CFO in a business and you can take off some of those capital assets so they're not depreciated the same way and similar accounting mechanisms. Those all come together. Like I said, that's what we call it stacking in the long run, and it really stacks to unlock all those financial efficiencies in the long over hopefully many years is our goal. And here's a good example. I mentioned earlier about projects in the pipeline, and just actually in the last week, we're up to 151 total opportunities. And there's a couple of things I'll point out here. This pipeline is just, like I said, it's just over $5 billion worth of economic impact. And those are in various stages of development. Some are very early. Some are nearing completion. But what you'll see here is and I'll show this and then on a slide here in a second, the diversity in type of projects across the entire state. You can see that we are really doing making a concerted effort to make sure we are looking across the entire state, because the state at large offers so much to these companies. And it's really an opportunity across there. And also call your attention to the top right there with the 18 projects. That's actually up to 22 now. And those are projects or companies that have expressed interest in coming to the state of Florida, but they don't know where yet. And so they're really looking across the entire state. And that's where we're helping, working very closely with the Department of Commerce to align what makes the most sense, whether it's manufacturing capabilities, whether it's the workforce they need. But I think the good news, and that's what I alluded to earlier, was the pace of these projects is not slowing down, and that's a real positive thing overall. I do like to remind that you know, we are an aerospace development authority, so that allows us to, and you can see this is what it's defined in the Florida statute. Obviously, I don't need to read it to you all. You're very familiar with this, but just to remind really the larger audience that it is not just space, right? And anything that's aerospace related really gives us a lot of flexibility to work in some creative ways with these companies as they come in. And I think it also speaks to, and we'll talk a little bit this in the future, is that blend of aerospace, and when you look at the underlying foundational capabilities, whether you have highly technical skilled labor that is working on rocket engines or aircraft engines or maybe other highly technical fields, those are interweaved, and they're very important to the entire aerospace industry at large. I mentioned earlier, so these are some of our representative deals that we've done or closed out recently. And I'll call your attention to a couple different things here. First of all is the diversity in types of deals. Some of them are traditional. CAE is a good one. That was an expansion of a training facility in Tampa Bay area. So that's a kind of a traditional facility build there. But SimCom is another one where we were working on simulators. So that's actual equipment. Likewise, you see that with the Northrop Grumman deal, you know, that was tooling equipment. Amazon's, I mentioned earlier, Project Kuiper is just a traditional space Florida, I would call it, you know, right in our wheelhouse in terms of the type of programs that we are adept at bringing to the table. But you can see there, some of these are long-term relationships. Embraer is a really good example of a relationship we've had for many years. And then they just continue to come back and say, because I think they realize the value proposition that we provide overall. So you can see the diversity of these types of programs and the types of companies that are coming into the state of Florida in the aerospace industry, very interested in what we can do for them here in the state. So if we look ahead, though, there's a couple things I'll offer, and I'll touch it. I could go on and on about what I think the future here in the state is, and I'm happy to answer those questions. But in the interest of time, there's a couple of things I will touch on. You know, my number one goal as I kind of look ahead is we are – the goal is to build the capacity, right? I mentioned our space transportation network. We want to be able to make sure that we have the capacity to meet future demand. It's difficult to see what does that future demand look like, what is the market going to drive to. But in the long run – our intent is to set the conditions so that whatever that market demand looks like in the future, we are ready for it and are able to take advantage of it and continue to be leaders in this area and truly build that interplanetary hub for aerospace commerce. that transportation network cannot stand on its own. Any logistics chain, right, is usually multimodal, and we are very blessed here in the state to be considered a quintamodal state, if you will, where we add space to air, sea, land, rail and roads as different modes of transportation. But what you can imagine that in the future, as I mentioned earlier, kind of the simplifying from a space transportation approach where you're just moving cargo or people or goods and services to different places, you're just going either to, from, through space. You need to have that back-end transportation. And advanced air mobility is one of those things that I think, you know, you can imagine moving goods and services around the world via space, which you could do in a very short period of time, 30 minutes to an hour. You wouldn't want it to then get back on the ground and then have to sit waiting for long periods of time, right? And so things like advanced air mobility, eVTOL, I think the infrastructure for that is going to be especially important to maintaining those rapid logistics flows. We're very excited to be participating in that industry right now. And I think what we've seen, Florida is may be a hotbed for the further development of that industry. And we're excited to be a part of that. And are looking forward to working with those companies as they continue to work and develop not only their infrastructure, not only their manufacturing maintenance, but really the policy and the regulatory piece that goes along with that as well. You know, I mentioned earlier that we have to have a space transportation network, and that is not just on the ground. So we're going to have to consider what is the next step when we consider going from ground to space and then from into space to somewhere else, right? That is the future, and when that future comes, it could be 10 years, it might be 20, 30, 40 years. We don't know. But we're going to need to start having that same conversation that we have with any mode of transportation. You're going to have, you're going to have to stop for fuel somewhere, you know. And we all need to stop to eat right along the road if we're driving somewhere. So you need those. You need to understand what that infrastructure looks like. And some of that's going to be what's the value proposition of doing things in space. And in-space manufacturing is a good example of that. So we have to have that thinking now. And then go forward from there. And then finally, there's still things that we can be adding to in terms of our financial toolkit and spaceport tax exempt bonds, being able to issue those like any other port is incredibly important. As we know, thank you for the support for that, Chairman Wright and the committee for that. I think that's going to be incredibly important. We're looking very positive up on the Hill, and I think that is something that we're really going to continue to unlock our capabilities overall. And then, as I mentioned, our intent is really to continue to make sure Florida is leading as the gateway for the aerospace industry and really, really being that hub. You know, I liken it to there's several analogies that I think make sense. Suez Canal, Panama Canal, right? We are blessed to have a capability that is truly internationally leading, and there are very few capabilities like this across the entire globe, and we intend to take advantage of that. So with that, I will open it up to any questions that you all have.
Thank you very much, Colonel Long. Any questions for the Colonel? No? I'd like to comment. I appreciate your position on this, and I like to remind every time we get an opportunity, we don't want to take all the good things we have here for granted ever. And I can see that you're taking that seriously also. Sometimes when I have the opportunity to see what other states are doing, it seems like what they're doing is trying to figure out how to take it from Florida.
That's right.
Seems to be their mode of operations, like we've got to make sure that doesn't happen. I have a question for you, and I don't know if you can answer it here today, but it would seem to me that we need to do something here as a state to try and improve additional land, you know, in and around the space area with the NASA property being pretty well leased up. It seems to me that we need to be more proactive in that area and have some developed land with infrastructure already in place. Otherwise, I think it's hurting us because it takes too long. If someone wants to move here, build here, how long before we can get a piece of property we can build on? How's 18 months? Too long,
yeah. You
know? So maybe that's something we can try and work on with you and try and help to find a way to make that happen and provide some funding from the state to have additional commercial land in the area.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Another question, are you working on a wharf study?
We are. Like we are working on a wharf study. Wharf study is about 90%. We're at 90%. We're getting some of the final stakeholder comments. Expect to get those comments in probably by the end of this month. We'll wrap that up and probably have it for public consumption here shortly.
And anything we can do to help you with that? I know that some of the retriever boat owners, I call them, are looking elsewhere because they need to know where they can put their boats. And at the same time, our port people are doing a great job in attracting additional cruise ships. So we have one little parking spot for all these big boats. Yeah, it'll be good to see if we can find an answer to that.
So. Yeah, I agree. Well, I think we'll have some good solutions going forward.
Super. Anything from anybody else? No? Well, thank you again, sir, for
Absolutely.
Being here today.
Any
appreciate
free
rides?
We can work on that.
Thank you, Colonel.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir, very much. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to speak on this subject? Okay. Well, I'm going to turn it over, I guess, to you, Vice Chair. I'm going to turn over the chair to you, and we'll present our bill today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're taking up tab 1, Senate Memorial 226,
on the Florida National Guard by Senator Wright. Senator Wright, you are recognized to explain the memorial.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Senate Memorial 226 urges Congress to impel the United States National Guard Bureau to examine the resource allocations of the Florida National Guard and to allow an increase in its force structure. We are allocated 12,000 guardsmen and women for our state of 22 million recipients, or residents, excuse me, and the second to the last for ratio of guardsmen to population out of the 54 National Guard units. The allocation, this blows my mind, the allocation for the 12,000 guardsmen is based on our state's population of 1958. I think we've grown a little bit, huh? We must increase the number of guardsmen for the protection of Florida, which has the fifth most declared state of emergencies over the last 70 years. We are currently underprepared for a large-scale disaster where we may be unable to receive additional support from our friendly neighboring states. The Florida National Guard is made up of many brave men and women who are heavily relied on, and we must ensure that they have the guardsmen necessary to appropriately respond when called upon. And that is the memorial, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Are there any questions on the memorial? No questions. No questions. I have one appearance. William Clark.
Come on down.
Is it working?
It's working.
Well, thank you, Chair Wright, and members of the committee. You guys are familiar with the Defend the Guard legislation that died in this committee last session. I was hoping I could compel you guys to possibly incorporate and amend some of that language into this guard bill, just because you look at what's going on now with problems with the state and federal. Look at Texas, for example. We had the Texas National Guard putting up wire, floating barriers in conflict with the federal, the executive branch coming down and basically cutting that wire, removing them barriers, we're protecting our own sovereignty. And basically, Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution, it states that it's about balance of war powers. And it says, the executive branch has become too strong in basically with their powers without the congressional and legislative branch being able to have a say-so before we actually deploy our National Guardsmen into active military service. We'd like this language would kind of, give us an opportunity for a representative of Florida to have a say-so at a congressional level before the executive level just deploys the troops. Just some numbers for you. 45% of the soldiers deployed in the global war on terror were National Guardsmen. 482 Army National Guardsmen died in Operation Iraqi Freedom and Operation Enduring Freedom. And the goal of this legislation, of getting this language amended into this bill, if anyone's interested in, and y'all have it, of course, from last session, would be just to balance the powers. We've got three major global conflicts going on now at this point, and to take into consideration the armed forces recruiting goals, or they're missing by miles right now, as bad as it's ever been. So, to balance some power so Florida can have a little bit of say at a congressional level before, the executive branch just deploys our troops over into active military. Thank y'all.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Are there any questions for Mr. Clark? Seeing none. Is there any debate on the memorial?
No debate, but I do have a comment.
Senator Wright,
thank you. Thank you, sir. Senator Wright, thank you for doing this. You and I have talked long and hard about the utilization of our National Guard, all the things that they are asked to do day in, day out. And to the speaker's point, let's talk about what goes on at a federal and a state level and all of the things that they are asked to do. We have to provide stability for this, and I do hope that this goes out there and it catches somebody's eye. In the end, our hands are tied because it is a zero-sum game federally, but we have to continue to do all we can to push this and make sure that we actually have manning accurate with our needs in this state. We love our National Guard. They are a godsend, and we're going to continue to do all we can to support you. Thank you for this very good memorial.
Thank you, Senator. And I also agree that you can't base on a population of 1958. Doesn't make sense. I mean, I don't know. And that goes through any administration to make changes, you know, that we need so much that the Guard has done in each state. And their usage to save our constituents in hard times. So, yeah, we need to look at that and change that and make sure this happens. Thank you again for this memorial. Senator, you're recognized to close on your memorial.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just want to point out to the audience that may not know that both of these gentlemen are veterans. Both Torres and Collins are veterans, and thank you for the comments. I appreciate it. We do love our National Guardsmen and women. We love our military. We love our law enforcement here in the state of Florida, and we're very fortunate to have the folks that protect us each and every day, either here or abroad. And we do all want to do everything we can to make it the best state it can be. So with that, I close on the memorial.
Thank you, Senator. Lois, please call the roll on the Senate Memorial 226.
Senator Baxley. Senator Collins.
Yes.
Senator Pizzo. Chair Wright.
Yes.
Vice Chair Torres.
Yes. By your vote, Senate Memorial 226 is reported favorably. I'm going to turn the chair back to Chair Wright. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Chair. Okay, we didn't have anyone missing, so we don't need to record any voting. Is there any objection, or can we move forward? No objection. Is there any other business before the committee today? No? Okay, Senator Torres, you've done a great job today, and you moved that we adjourn. If there is no objection, seeing none, the motion is carried and adopted, and we are adjourned.